Can I invite the kiddos to come forward and join me? Come on. Where do you want to sit? Right there. It's a good spot. So this morning, you know, it's a family service Sunday. And this morning, I'm going to preach like a bit of a hybrid sermon. And I'm going to do that because I need to spend a little time, a little more time explaining some things about these readings that we have from the Bible that the grown-ups won't get. You as kids have this experience of being a little closer to heaven, which makes it easier for you to understand the content of these particular stories and what's being said than we grown-ups do. I'm going to start with the first of the two first stories of the Bible. And maybe you're thinking right now, like, wait a minute, Jimmy, like, how can there be two first stories, right? Like, either one's first and one's second. But just look, I'm a religious professional. Trust me, there are two first stories in the Bible. And in the very first story of the first two stories, in the very first sentences, what we get is this picture of God. And the story says that God is hovering, and that God is hovering over what we know as like the abyss or nothingness or the absence of substance or material, or that God is hovering over chaos. And the very first activity that God does in this place is to be creative. God begins to create order out of disorder, or order out of chaos, or things out of nothingness. And that's a little hard to understand, but that is what God is doing in the very first action that God takes. And if you listen to me preach Sunday after Sunday, you know that oftentimes, almost always, I preach about love. And love comes second in the story. The very first action that God takes is creativity. And the second action that God takes is love. When God looks at the creative work, God says, like, ah, this is good. This is beautiful. This is lovely. So I want to take just a second. I want y'all to close your eyes. Can you close your eyes? I mean all y'all too. Yeah. If you don't feel comfortable closing your eyes, that's cool. Just maybe direct your gaze downward. And I want you to invite your reason or your logic, the part of your mind that usually tries to figure out problems or understand things. I want you to invite that part of your mind just to step aside. Not to go anywhere, but just to step aside. And I want to invite... You want to close your eyes, Peter? Can you? Do you feel cool about that? Yeah. Okay. Nice. Thanks, buddy. And then what I want you to invite is goodness. Invite goodness into your minds and your hearts. Invite beauty. Invite nurture. Invite safety. Invite another measure of goodness. From that place of goodness, I invite you to imagine something good for yourself. Anything. It can be anything. Imagine anything good for yourself. You got it? Okay, come back to the room. You can open your eyes. I want you to hold on to that goodness that you invited for yourself just for a moment. If you were paying attention to this particular passage that we have from the gospel this morning, you know that that story is primarily about this guy named John the Baptist. And if you're around here last week, you had an introduction to John the Baptist through Brian's teaching or from what we read in Children's Chapel. This guy is a wild man. He's one of the wildest men of all the wild people of the entire Jewish Christian story. He is an eccentric. What I mean to tell you is John the Baptist is weird. And if you were with Brian last week, Brian got weird with John the Baptist weird. Brian invited, I'm not taking any questions yet, Peter, but hold it. Just stay with me. Brian got weird with John the Baptist weird. Brian invited John the Baptist, this crazy, wild, weird character, into our very own context, our own experience, into Jackson Hole. He, with his imagination, imagined John the Baptist way up in the Grovant Mountains, standing in the Grovant River, communing with nature and all the power that is in God's kingdom. And then Brian had John the Baptist taking a two-day journey from those mountains all the way back down into this valley where we live. He didn't bring him into town. He didn't bring him into Jackson. Brian stopped John the Baptist up at Schwabacher's Landing, standing in the water of the Snake River, that river that's so important to those of us who live here. It is the artery of our valley, bringing life and oxygen and flourishing and bliss into the center of our valley. Brian had John the Baptist standing there, not wearing camel's hair like the story tells us, but wearing a bear hide. And if you remember, the story says that John the Baptist eats locusts and wild honey, but Brian had John the Baptist eating elk meat and thistles that he learned to eat from indigenous women in our valley. And remember, Brian said that John the Baptist had a satchel, had a bag on his hip, and in that bag was squirming and swarming cosmos. It was like beautiful things, all things created, dreams and blessing and tears and sorrow and poems and lyrics and stories and triumph and failure, all in one bag while John the Baptist was in the river baptizing people who came from Jackson up to Schwabacher's Landing, over from Kelly, down from Moran. And if you remember, Brian even used the deepest part of his imagination to say, even people who live on the West Bank came to Schwabacher's Landing to be baptized by John the Baptist in the Snake River in Schwabacher's Landing. John the Baptist is one of the most creative and imaginative figures in all of the biblical narrative. And in this particular story that we heard from the gospel this morning, we get another aspect of John the Baptist. We get this different thing that happens. If you remember the story, John the Baptist is not standing in the Snake River anymore. John the Baptist is in prison. He's in jail. And he has been put in jail by people like me. Yes, the religious authority, those people who are in charge of helping people with faith, have put John the Baptist in jail because they think his ideas are too imaginative. But we know that God is quite imaginative, because the very first thing that God does in the very first story of the two first stories is to be creative. And so John the Baptist in jail has this moment, and he's seized with stress and anxiety and fear. Because in jail, he's afraid that he's going to be in big time trouble. And that big time trouble that John the Baptist is facing will change the course of his life. In fact, it might even end his life. And from this place of fear, John the Baptist sends one last email. He sends an email to Jesus' crew. And he says, like, just give me a sense. Just give me the sense that everything is going to be okay. Jesus, just tell me that you are the one who we think you are. And John the Baptist thinks that Jesus is going to send him back just a one-line email. And that one-line email should read something like, yeah, John, it's true. I'm the Messiah. I'm the one that you've been waiting for. I'm the chosen one of God who will bring about a new era for Israel, a new era of political, social, and religious order. But that's not what Jesus says. That's not at all what Jesus says. Jesus just says, I want you guys to go back, and I want you to look John in the eyes, and I want you to tell him, don't tell him that I'm the Messiah. Tell him that the blind, that people who are blind, those people are going to see. That people who are lame, that people who struggle to get around or walk or run or skip, I want you to tell them that all of those people will be fully able-bodied. That they will be able to run, that they will be able to walk, that they will be able to skip. I want to tell you that people who have skin diseases, those people will be cured. That people who can't hear, those people will be able to hear. I want you to tell John that dead people will come to life again. I want you to tell John that the people that we all know, the constituency of human beings that are struggling the most, that those people will not struggle anymore at all. Jesus is inviting John back into the experience of being an imaginative human being, of being a creative, of using this tool, this God-given tool, called our imaginations. You used your imagination just a second ago. Do you remember what you imagined? Maybe you remember what you imagined for yourself. Great thinkers. People that we admire. People that most assuredly, over the course of the next 10 years, you will learn so much about in school, or people that you have already learned about and admire. Great thinkers. Albert Einstein says that the sign of intelligence is not knowledge or all the smart things that we know, but the sign of true intelligence is the imagination. Carl Jung, this guy who's like the father of analytical psychology, says image, imagination, comes before idea. That it is imagination that brings us to the threshold of the unconscious, of all the good things that God has planned for us that we just are just out of sight for us. Joseph Campbell says that imagination is the organ of meaning, that it is the engine that carries us to bliss. Stephen Hawking, a guy that honestly somebody like me shouldn't know anything about, says imagination is the courage to see beyond the visible edge. Hawking Stephen Hawking said, without imagination, there would be no theoretical physics. Do y'all know what theoretical physics is? Me neither. Desmond Tutu, who is a priest like me and was a bishop, an Anglican or Episcopal bishop, says that imagination is the very beginning of moral vision, that without using the tool, the God-given tool of imagination, humanity will never be liberated from unjust systems. God has given us a tool to use called our imagination. It draws us out of the mundane or the everyday parts of our lives in the physical world into this metaphysical world that is so important that we've been trying to figure our way into during this season of Advent. So let's go back. Let's go back for just a second to that thing that you imagined earlier. Are you remembering it? Are you remembering it, Peter? You got it? That thing that you imagined that I asked, you got it? Okay. Just hold it there in your mind for a second. Let me ask this question. Was what you imagined big enough? Did you imagine that wolves would lie down with elk calves? That bears would take naps with red dogs, with bison calves? Did you imagine that guns that sometimes people use to harm people, did you imagine that those would be melted down and pounded into soup bowls? Soup bowls that would be filled with warm stewing, delivered to a table populated by both friends and enemies. Maybe did you imagine that you were sitting beside a well with a green dragon, and you and the green dragon were telling stories, fantastic stories one to another about the adventures that you had, and that the well that you were sitting beside was full of the water of life, water that if you just took one sip of that water, you would never be thirsty again? Did you imagine a tear, the last tear that you shed? Did you imagine that a tear from the last time that you cried, maybe this morning, maybe yesterday, maybe last week, maybe 2 decades ago, did you imagine that that tear would become the first drop of a cosmic ocean that would be filled with teeming celestial life, and that across the surface of that ocean, angels would adventurously travel? Was your dream big enough? Jesus said to him, "Go tell John. The blind will see, the lame will walk, the lepers will be cleansed, the deaf will hear, the dead will be raised." That constituency of humanity who are in the deepest parts of desperation will no longer be desperate. Kids, church, dream big dreams. If anyone ever says to you the phrase, "It's just your imagination," you can say to them, "Get thee behind me, Satan." Kids, Church, let your imaginations run wild. Amen. Thanks for listening.